Welcome to The Unforgiving 60 with your hosts, Ben Pronk and Tim Curtis. As two ex-SAS guys armed with MBAs, Ben and Tim seek out people leading lives less ordinary and talk with them about how they fill their unforgiving minutes and what helps them go always a little further. Like intellectual bowerbirds, we aim to collect shiny little objects of knowledge that we think can help build better humans.
Welcome to the Unforgiving 60 podcast. I'm Tim Curtis, as always, with my co-host Ben Pronk.
Hello, Tim.
Welcome to RV 31, Benjamin.
Yeah, 31.
What's an RV?
Recreational vehicle. A Winnebago.
Yes, that's true. In the military parlance, particularly the special operations vernacular,
yeah,
what is the RV?
A recreational vehicle. I always wanted a tactical Winnebago. It is.
You've been waiting 31 RVs to get that gag.
No, I just thought of that.
That's good.
It's a... Oh, shit, I don't know. I'm so hungry.
A rendezvous point.
A rendezvous.
Yes.
Yes. It is a place of reconciliation where you...
Reconciliation.
Reconsolidation.
Call a padre. Do a bit of confession.
Can we start again?
No, we can't.
Okay. I got to stop drinking before podcast. No, I'm sober. I'm just forgetful. Reconsolidation, not reconciliation, where you can rally up with... your call sign, if you've been separated, you can consolidate, maybe reflect on the things that have just happened and move forward with your life.
And in our version of the RV, we will consolidate on episodes in the recent past, including...
Can we reconciliate as well? Yes. You've got a few things to answer for over the last few
Padre,
weeks.
Padre, yeah. I have lied, cheated and stolen and tolerated those that have. Jazz Diab, our special forces nuclear scientist, mm-hmm. nerd and mum. Mm-hmm. I had last week with Jazz. She is awesome fun. Talking all things science, more to follow on that. Rob Barber, SAS doctor, now back in Africa, started in Africa, back in Africa. Ian Pryor from the Western Force talking about how professional athletes can maintain longevity, a guy who's been in the world of professional rugby. We have 120 kilo humans running at you hard for a living. How does he keep himself for over a decade staying inside that environment? Then we did a little thing for the Festival of Veterans Art on creativity building resilience. But before we get to Jazz Diab and beyond, what have you been up to, Ben?
I've been travelling the world. I've had a really cool couple of weeks, albeit, you know, always at the expense of time away from family, which is always a tough juggle. But this one was sweetened by the fact there was a couple of interesting destinations.
Three, in fact.
Three, yeah. Brother Dan and I ran a resilience retreat in Morocco, of mm-hmm. all places, with a just amazing group of people and clearly a really interesting destination. I'd not been to Morocco before, but we spent some time in Marrakesh and then down to a place called Essaouira on the coast. Mm-hmm. Fun fact... there's a Jimi Hendrix cafe in Essaouira. So Hendrix, amongst other rock stars, including Jim Morrison and I think George Harrison, but it was on the sort of a track for rock stars back in the 60s. So Hendrix spent apparently 13 days there, and I'm not sure what was
the attraction
partaking of, but he was zoning out, and there's even suggestions that... He wrote some of Electric Ladyland based on his experiences there. So quite an interesting little sort of fun fact pop culture history, but really fascinating, beautiful, beautiful country and lovely people.
Mm-hmm. Would you recommend Morocco
destination? Yeah,
for
I thought
people?
It was really cool.
Looking for somewhere unique?
Yeah, absolutely. Really fascinating, both Essaouira, but particularly Marrakesh had these amazing medinas, walled cities, fortress-style cities with amazing sort of markets, centuries-old markets in there, and some really cool architecture and great food. I would. And you know, clearly like everywhere you've got to watch, but... safe, you know, it certainly did not feel like a dangerous, dodgy sort of place.
Medinas, any funky cold medinas?
No, none. But yeah, notwithstanding that, a good visit. And then from there to Barcelona,
mm-hmm.
a quick weekend there. Actually, I'd been training, I think we said in the first RV, I had goals
Perth
this year.
Marathon?
Yeah, yeah. To do a marathon along Canning River, and then obviously work changed, and so I had to do that marathon in Barcelona instead.
It doesn't sound like you can call that work, by the way, but yep, gotcha.
Well, it actually was hard work by the 36-kilometre mark, mm-hmm. but certainly not paid work. But that was good. I really enjoyed that. My first big city marathon, so 20,000 people,
right.
Chaos at drink stations, big packs, wonderful crowds, amazing city, nice flat race, past all the sites, you know, the Sagrada Familia, you know, all the Gaudi architecture, which was super impressive to, you know, just amazing to run next to. And the other interesting thing that I'd forgotten is just how prevalent smoking still is in Europe. And so these wonderful crowds, it seemed like everyone in Barcelona was lining the streets, but also smoking.
Right.
That was pretty cool, having the sort of crowd support to come along with a lot of passive tobacco smoke.
And quick time?
It was good. Yeah, yeah. So 2:58.39, a little bit faster than my last one. Definitely happy. I think I've set myself two goals this year. I wanted to go under 3 in a marathon, and I want to try and go under 5 minutes for a mile. So that's what I'll switch my goals to. I haven't been able to blow out my calves and ankles with marathon training, so let's see if I can do that with track training.
Mm. And then you continued in a northerly direction to Chicago.
Yeah, a place I'd never been either, despite having lived in the States for a year. But another one of our clients, another resilience engagement over there. You know, it is... Well, I feel we're blessed to be able to work in this space. I find it such an interesting and rewarding area and topic to work in, the resilience stuff. But it's made so by the people you get in these workshops. And this was another incredible group of really high-performing humans who, you know, are dealing with a lot of stress and pressure and really open about, you know, ways that we can together work in that environment to help sort of mitigate some of those. And so really enjoyable few days. And in addition to that, the cultural experiences, went to a Bulls game, which was amazing.
And you went with the walking sporting almanac, yeah. Andy, our colleague, who's
Andy
an absolute superstar.
Yeah, yeah.
And anything he didn't know about Chicago Bulls?
Nothing that was worth knowing.
Yeah.
Nothing that was worth knowing. But we also did, I'll tell you what, neither of us knew much about Chicago cuisine. And we're much better versed now. The intricacies of deep dish pizza.
What is deep dish pizza?
Well, it's essentially a pie with sort of pizza topping, so that sort of thickness. And in fact, depending on the type you get, Giordano's is reportedly the classic Chicago deep dish pizza, and that's got almost a short crust, like pie pastry. And then the other one is Luminati's, which I thought they were saying Illuminati. I thought it was some kind of secret society, but Lou... And second name, Minati, is another pizza purveyor in Chicago, and that's got a cornbread crust.
All right.
I personally preferred.
I like cornbread.
Yeah, yeah, you would like that. I tell you what you might not like is the Chicago hot dog.
Which okay. is a Chicago hot dog.
Yeah, so it's a hot dog that does not have tomato sauce, doesn't have ketchup.
Mm-hmm.
It's got mustard, but it's got all sorts of pickled objects on it, like little green, bright fluoro green items. I'm not sure what they were.
Good for your gut microbiome.
I don't think these were. Okay. I think these were really, they were beyond that. Yep. I think they're still in my gut microbiome, to tell you the truth. So yeah, strange take on a hot dog.
Highly processed fermented foods.
Yeah, yeah. So not a fan of, not a massive fan of the Chicago hot dog, but the Luminati's deep dish pizza, thumbs up.
What about the weather? I mean, Chicago, isn't it noted for its winds?
Andy and I walked out of our hotel on day one of the trip and just got blown sort of 5 metres down the path and looked at each other and sort of both said windy city at the same time. But yeah, it's, no shit, it is a windy city, hence the name. But we were there also over St. Patrick's Day. We actually left on St. Patrick's Day, but we're fortunate enough to be there in the morning, which was beautiful.
Be cool. Yeah.
And watched the river get dyed green.
Ooh.
Which is really cool. Quite. And you know, that great American sort of holiday, festive sort of vibe and lots of spring breaky kind of college kids getting super drunk on sort of premix at about 10 in the morning. It was quite interesting.
Simpsons vision there of some sort of nuclear waste into the river to dye it green. How do they dye a river green?
I didn't ask, but we did go on a river cruise and saw some of the amazing architecture. One of these really funny, you know, the American tour cruises where the person's very factual but also got a comedy routine going on. And so it was really enjoyable. But two fun facts. One, that the river used to be so polluted that the Great Chicago Fire of 1882, it was left unchecked to the river because they thought, well, it's not going to jump the river. Turns out if your river has 2 inches of basically oil sludge on top of it. Yeah, so the river was on fire during the Chicago Fire, and that's what leveled the whole city. But also the river flows backwards. It flows away from Lake Michigan.
Right.
Yeah, so they worked out that they were pouring all this crap in their river and it was flowing into their source of water, which that's a bad thing. It was the cholera capital of the world, right, apparently. This is all fun facts from the river cruise. And so some amazing ingenuity and engineering. They dug some stuff out backwards to reverse the flow of the river so it no longer flows from its source, it flows to its source. Weird.
So you're off in the stadium, you're taking an NBA game, you see the Chicago Bulls, you've chowed down on some deep dish pizza and done a river cruise. I hope you build all this to personal account.
Put it this way, if our accountant calls, tell him I'm not in.
Maria, our bookkeeper's going to love you. Build up to the Resilient Shield PTY LTD. Entertainment and gifts.
Yep.
I'll get out of the ATO as well, by the way. And the Office of State Revenue. We had a meeting with the Office of State Revenue last year. You're wonderful people. We really appreciate your attentiveness into our accounts. Nothing to see here.
In unrelated news, this will be our last podcast. We're insolvent.
In fact, we have got a valuation coming in on this property, including podcast studio.
No, we're good. And everything's above board. In our books, possibly apart from my expenses on the Chicago trip.
Well, I have been domestic and the domestique while you're off gallivanting around the world. I've been doing the heavy lifting in Brizzy.
Yes.
Awesome. Awesome fun in Brisbane. And then down to...
Hobart.
Yeah, down to Hobart with...
Jazz Diab.
Jasmine Diab, nuclear scientist, nerd and mum. Great hanging out for a week with Jazz, talking all things leadership, teamwork and resilience. To one of our favourite demographics, south to Antarctica.
Yeah, and we've done a number of engagements with them, which I've always loved. It's such a cool group of people, such a great space. Traditionally, we've done some good eating down in Tassie. Did you tick any good sort of meals?
Yeah, well, Jazz and I have been down together a few times, so we're clocking up our favourites, but we try and break that a little bit and experiment.
Things.
Yeah, because she fell in love with these meatballs that one of the pubs serves. And of course, when we went back there, they'd been taken off the menu. Oh, so Jazz was devastated and made it very clear that the meatball should be back on the menu.
Right.
But no, we had an absolute blast down there. And yeah, it's great food. If you enjoy a glass of wine, white wine in particular, fantastic location. Big into their craft beers. And I even went for a few runs. I ran the Rivulet.
Yeah, I love that Rivulet track.
So quirky. And then, of course, we're talking about people who have seen, I don't even know how stuff uploads on my Strava, but apparently it does. And I had a few people say, oh, I saw you run the Rivulet. Did you see any platypus? I'm like, no. And apparently platypus are a thing on the Rivulet.
Platypi.
Yeah.
I think that place is so cool because it's like whatever it is, 5 minutes jog out of the city and you're suddenly in this amazing little Lord of the Rings style creek sort of forest thing.
Yeah, running off Mount Wellington down into Hobart and actually sadly then ends up in Stormwater. But before it hits Hobart proper, it's a beautiful little track along a wonderful little stream and runs up to one of the old breweries.
Yeah, I think it goes the Cascade Brewery and then I think the Cadbury Chocolate Factory's up.
Never got that far.
That way, it starts getting pretty lumpy. it starts getting really hilly. But I might have my wires crossed. Tasmanian listeners, listener, if you're out there, correct us if we're wrong on the location of the Cadbury Chocolate Factory.
Definitely a place to visit. If you've never been to Hobart, do yourself a favour. It is such a cool city, and what an amazing state. I think 500,000 people in the state, and there's so many cool things to do, from, you know, walks and the outdoor life through to, you know, some cool beaches, and food aplenty, as well as some distilleries and other things if you want to have a glass.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Tasmania. No, it's not. It's just a cool place to go. But beautiful segue into reflections on our discussion with your travelling companion for that Hobart trip,
Jazz Diab. Scientist, and in fact, I love the conversation with Jazz, who didn't just hit the glass ceiling, she busted through it in the world of special operations. I think you were both leading different organisations in Special Operations Command around the same time.
A bit offset.
She, even though she would not admit to this, she'd be very dismissive, was an absolute trailblazer for combat engineers going into the Special Operations Engineer Regiment, which piqued her interest in this thing called chemical, biological, radiological and nuclear response.
Yeah. One of the things I love, and we reflected in the episode, but I think it's worth touching again on here, is just that point that she didn't do it to be a trailblazer, to be the first, any of that sort of stuff. And the other thing that I think is really, really cool is that she didn't try to be someone she wasn't. She didn't sort of try to out-bloke the blokes or out-nerd the nerds or out sort of engineer the engineers. She just did her thing as the unique, authentic, amazing human that she is, and she did it really, really well. And that, you know, no kidding, is what I think led to her success. She wasn't trying to be someone she wasn't. She was just herself and a very good version of that.
She tells that story actually in leadership forums related to the concept of authenticity, that, you know, she was largely in an all-male environment. There was, I think, one, two, or maybe three females. And to use her words, she dressed like the men, she behaved like the men, she talked like the men, until she realised, this just makes me feel really miserable. Mm. And it's quite sad hearing her talk about that, but so uplifting and empowering when she realises, this is not me.
Exactly.
And then decides, I'm going to dress how I like, act how I like, walk like how I like, and speak how I like, because that is the authentic me.
And that's the thing that, no kidding, that's what correlated really with the success, just being that good version of herself and breaking through all those barriers, as you said.
Rugby player, I love it. Jazz played rugby, there you go, a bit more of authenticity. Mm. Girls aren't playing rugby as a general rule, but Jazz Diab, she's playing rugby. And crochet.
Yeah, and that, like a nice segue, we're going to talk about ANVAM and FOVA and all sorts of acronyms like that, but Jazz has a connection with them as well. But really cool, not only on that sort of creative side of things, which we spoke about in that episode, but also that mindfulness. You know, this is something that Jazz does for Jazz. It is a nice, you know, form of meditation in many ways.
Mm. Also love that she opened up about her personal struggles. If you read her biographical information, you'd see Jazz Diab, Conspicuous Service Cross, first at this, first at that, you know, presented here, personally selected for operational service to be the aide-de-camp to the Chief of Army. She looks like an absolute pin-up example of a leader.
Mm.
But by her own admission, she was challenged by her pregnancy, certainly the late stages of her pregnancy, and the fact that her beautiful little four-year-old Zoe has dwarfism.
Yeah, yeah. But again, just that idea that, you know, there is no perfect. You know, it is about being vulnerable, being authentic, and hitting or meeting all of these challenges head on in a genuine way. And I felt very privileged. I've known Jazz a number of years, but certainly didn't know a number of those details we spoke about in the episode, and I feel very privileged that she was able to share those, and I think it was incredibly inspirational to hear them.
And interesting, the lessons that she learnt through coming through the late stages of pregnancy and then giving birth to Zoe and of course beyond that, she's now decided I'm going to be a champion for this thing, and I am going to change the prism through which people are looking at the problem, and also, I reckon, critically, be super unselfish about giving her time to those who are in similar predicaments as her.
Yeah.
And, you know, she talks about Zoe having a superpower, reprogramming the way that the kids view themselves.
Yeah, no, really inspirational stuff.
If you haven't heard that one, check it out. The 2024 Resilience Retreat is on 24 to 27 October on the Gold Coast hinterland. It's all inclusive. You will learn how to get active in your own rescue to be the very best version of you, applying the Resilient Shield methodology, the evidence-based, peer-reviewed, comprehensive architecture to ensure that you can get active in your own rescue. We'll have activity-centric workshops. We'll teach tools and techniques to make sure that we can embed a deep understanding of resilience in you. Come and interact with our inspiring facilitators and guest speakers. We hope to see you there. On to Africa.
Yeah.
Rob Barber, a doctor on my selection course. Go on. There's a gag there. I've laid it out.
Yeah, that's right. The person you spent the most time with on your selection course.
He didn't admit nor deny that he saw me inside the sick bay of selection, but maybe I was delirious. I don't remember it. But Rob Barber, SAS doctor, who was born in Africa, in Kenya, and then came out to Australia and sort of discovered rugby through school and to be competitive, goes to medical, study medicine at the University of Western Australia, and then gets a prompt to join the army as an army doctor.
Yeah.
And in his time as a military doctor, he decides, I want to go and do this thing called the SAS. Initially, his bosses don't agree with that. They say, no, we're not going to recommend you. But finally, he finds himself on a selection course. And knowing not much in terms of, you know, personal skills, field craft, he has to be curious and inquisitive. And unsurprisingly, that builds the dividend of trust that saw him get through. Got selected.
And look, like so many of the people that we've had the real privilege of interviewing on this show, when you read Rob's bio, it's amazing. Surely, you know, I couldn't do that. It's that sort of amazing sort of next level perspective. But when you actually speak with the human, he is a human, you know, and so many of these people have done amazing things. They are just normal people who have this ability to sort of set their mind on something, to work towards it, to fail, to get back up, to achieve it, to deal with obstacles. And, you know, if nothing else, you know, the one thing I've got from doing this podcast series is that's it. That's the secret. There's no silver bullet, but it is just that kind of authenticity and being able to keep going, that a little further concept.
Yeah, we talked to the construct of Ikigai. Rob gets out of the military saying he'd done everything that he wanted to do, paraphrasing there my words. He then goes to New Guinea and he's a doctor over on some mine sites in New Guinea. The magnetic pull back to Africa is strong, however, and he's volunteering back in Africa on his time off. And ultimately, it finds him back in Tanzania running a lodge, safaris, leading treks and trips. And nearly it is this beautiful intersection of Ikigai, which is the Japanese concept for...
Yeah, the intersection of the things that you love, the things you're good at, the things you can get paid for, and the things that the world needs.
Yeah. Yep. He's nearly the pin-up for that.
Yeah, I'd say so. Concept of Ikigai. I'd say so. And I think also that... I think in the very Ikigai sense, I love that Ikigai includes that things you can get paid for. It's a very practical aspect that we need to live. We can't just do absolutely altruistic things without any thought for survival. But I think it's got very heavily in it this idea that, you know, we're not talking about, you know, needing the Ferrari and the beachfront mansion. It is, you know, what do you actually need? You know, how much do you need to earn to be able to sort of... sustain your lifestyle and fill those other boxes in, or keep those other boxes in balance, which I think certainly Rob's championing in his current work.
Ben, to a guy who, by his own definition,
in Africa.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, born in Africa, Ian Pryor, a guy who's got over a decade of high-speed collisions in confined spaces. That doesn't sound great, isn't it, as a profession, high-speed collisions in confined spaces involving mostly your torso and head.
Yeah, yeah. But still has a very impressive head on his shoulders, both aesthetically and cognitively. I'd reckon Ian's a pretty amazing guy. We've had the pleasure of doing a bit of work with him, having a number of chats over the last few months as we've gotten to know him a bit better. And I thought in this chat really got some of his perspectives out and just highlighted, you know, what I think is probably fairly common, but, you know, there's some deep thinkers in the professional sports world. You obviously don't get to that level just by being a pure meathead, or it's probably rare to do that. I think you still need to have that head on your shoulders and certainly to have that longevity in the sport that Ian's demonstrated. Yeah, it's pretty impressive to hear not only his physical but also his sort of professional takes on the sport and life thereafter.
I mean, over a decade in professional rugby across three Super Rugby franchises, including captaining the Western Force, which is where we first met him. And in fact, we're running a leadership activity, experiential or practical activity for the Western Force. And I remember having this conversation with Ian, you know, like, what are you doing outside of rugby? Expecting, you know, probably a fairly, what I thought would be a fairly typical answer. And he said, oh, yeah, I'm just doing a neuroscience degree at the moment at UWA. That's what I'm doing outside of rugby. Hmm. And I think that's a beautiful example of the way he's pursued continual improvement for himself, personal and professional development. And one of the fascinating parts about Ian's rugby career is he felt at the five-year mark that he was plateauing. And so what he didn't do was go out there and do more strength and conditioning or, you know, learn skills. He moved his attention from that to things that he should be doing to improve performance that don't involve a rugby ball, like journaling, like meditation, ice baths, and it broke him through the plateau. It gave him a different perspective on not just the way he sees rugby on the pitch, but also the way he sees life off the pitch.
Yeah, and look, we're massive on things you can do to reduce your stress and to improve your decision-making, your performance under pressure, and we talk about, you know, mindfulness and breathing and grounding techniques. But Ian's particular example, I think, is one of the most powerful real-life applied versions of that. You know, his gladiator style, picking up the handful of grass and sand before he needs to kick a goal. And when you think about it, you know, converting a try in rugby, that's a really high pressure. It's like, you know, trying to kick for goal in footy. The whole world in AFL, the whole world stops, and you know, the spotlight almost literally just shines on you. And yeah, there'd be enormous pressure there. And him using that tactile sensation of rubbing sand and grass through his fingers to ground himself, to focus out everything else but that sensation, and then to go and perform a practical task. I thought it's a beautiful example of how these things can be applied in real life.
There's been plenty of negative publicity around Australian rugby with the state of the Wallabies in the recent World Cup, and we thank Ian for being honest in his insights on what the problem was.
Yeah.
The problem is wicked, and you know, you explained wicked problems and the tenets of a wicked problem, and we threw that to him, and he offered a commentary on how we could go some way to perhaps improve the state of Australian rugby in the face of wicked problems. Demons, 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 demons. I got demons in my woman and demons in my head. Then for Mark Johnson and the crew at ANVAM,
yeah,
we did a little podcast on creativity building resilience, artists in foxholes, for the Festival of Veterans Art, which has been recently in Melbourne. We also discussed that creativity isn't just painting a picture.
Mm.
It's doing things that actually rewire different parts of the brain, that open up neural pathways that perhaps you've never exercised before.
Yeah, and I love the sort of twin benefits of that deregulation. We spoke about, you know, jazz's crochet as a sort of mindfulness, calming, sort of meditation type thing, and I certainly find the same in drawing, and even, in fact, I dusted off my guitar the other week for the first time in a long time and sort of found that again. But I love that sort of idea that it's deregulation, but it's also creation. You're making something new. You've got an artifact at the end of it in a lot of creative endeavors. And that, to me, is a pretty cool sort of combination.
Mm. You want to be more dynamic, conscious, non-defensive, observant, collaborative and brave.
Yes.
Well, Ruth Richards at Harvard says, do this thing called creativity. Be more creative in the things that you do. And actually, you don't have to swing wildly, like rip out there, buy a paint set and try and paint the Mona Lisa. Just do little things that maybe adjust your normal behaviour into being a little bit more creativity.
Be a bit more creative.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'd agree. And I think it's, you know, the parameters are so wide and you know, I would even include, and it's probably not sort of dictionary definition, but, you know, working on cars or sort of fixing things.
Definitely.
And, you know, that kind of, you know, it's the same mechanisms where you're ideally getting into a flow state. You're just consumed with this thing that's not too hard, not too easy, good amount of challenge, that you know, ultimately ends up in something being done. I think you're hitting a lot of those, both the deregulation and the creative aspects.
Well, the definition's yours too, isn't it? You know, I mean, no one's going to say to you, that's not creativity, it doesn't count, because actually all of the evidence indicates that if it's new, it's novel, then it counts.
Mm.
This weekend, I am going to strip back a cast iron pot that my mother's had for years, and it's looking a bit weathered.
Yeah.
Strip that back, pull out the angle grinder, make it all look good, prime it and paint it. And I reckon there's a bit of creativity in that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Where would you stand on a YouTuber, a content creator?
Creative, definitely.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what the neuroscientists will tell you is you can't just get in your creativity groove. You have to be constantly looking for little nuances of creativity on your creativity for there to be benefits in, you know, priming and laminating these neural pathways.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you couldn't only ever be a YouTuber. That'll work initially, but then outside of that, you love it, stay with it, but do other things that are creative. Why do you ask? Are you a YouTuber?
No, I'm not. I'm just interested, certainly for mine, when the creative thing becomes a job, there's an interesting crossover. And I think a lot of people who are hobby artists or crocheters or leather makers or knife makers or whatever that just love it as a thing to do for themselves. I've anecdotally and certainly experienced myself, when you start getting commissions and you start having to do this thing, it sounds like the best thing ever. You get paid for your hobby, but it changes, or it can change the mechanism. And I'm trying to think if I follow any YouTubers, but I imagine it'd be so tough just coming up with content, like new content, and trying to not just create because you believe in it, but create to an algorithm and create to a sort of audience or your perception of an audience. I think that could make it difficult, could tarnish the sort of act of creativity.
Lovely segue, because listener feedback, we did get an email from John that actually accords with that.
Mm-hmm.
John said that, you know, he's embraced creativity as a form of veteran, but the difficult part of being creative is how to develop the concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you do inside that domain of creativity? And he says, quote, the concept is the hard part and the most challenging of all. And sadly, he says that professional arts community don't see veteran art to be anything but for mental health. Well, we hopefully have disproven that. Yeah, sure, it can
have some benefits in that way, but we all should be doing creativity because it does contribute to resilience, and it actually connects different parts of our brain networks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so certainly there are those mental health aspects. And I think sort of having had a little bit to do with the veterans art space, I think John's observation is a good one, that there's a sort of perception that, yeah, this is nice and sort of rehabilitative and a nice sort of art therapy type thing. But, I think it can be more than that. And certainly for, you know, there's some amazingly talented veteran artists out there who probably transcend just the therapeutical benefits of art and are actually producing some really challenging pieces.
He also says it was very somber to hear the music on the anniversary of Cracker's death, music that we played with your permission from the Bihar in Afghanistan on the anniversary of Cracker's death. He served with Cracker's in the military before Cracker's came onto the selection course.
Yeah. John's points is a fantastic one, that and this to me I think is the real point of art, is that it is so subjective, and I think it is so contextual and relative to the individual, and this is what I love about art in general, and particularly visual art, that you can get these wildly different sort of interpretations, and something could be incredibly evocative for someone and mean nothing to the person next to them. And I think this is why it's a really sort of interesting thing in this creative space, how you are sort of either doing something that means something to you or appealing to an audience, and how that can vary just depending on the individual.
Awesome. Yeah, check out those episodes, Jazz Diab, Ian Pryor, who have we missed out?
Rob Barber
and Creativity Builds Resilience. If you haven't got the back editions, they are available wherever you find your podcast. And while you're at it, you want to reach out and give us some listener feedback, debrief@unforgiving60.com. What's next? We're going farming in the next few weeks, you and I.
Yes, very much looking forward to that, a sort of ongoing engagement with a absolutely amazing client that we always love catching up with. So that'll be good fun in regional Victoria for a little while. Got a bit of time up outside of Kalgoorlie, which I'm also looking forward to on a mine site. Trying to think what else is about to keep us busy.
Plenty of stuff.
Certainly the prep for the resilience retreat in October. That's exciting to be running that again this year after a couple of years off.
I'm actually running a stress management workshop at the client's request. They wanted a stress management workshop in the next few days. And actually, we have an upcoming episode on stress and performance. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. And sort of in between all that, some Easter eggs. Easter will be probably done and dusted by the time this goes to air. But do you have a go-to Easter egg, Timmy? Have you got any that you...
Like anything with caramel, but I like hard caramel. I don't want just a normal, average chocolate egg.
The real toothbreaker.
Yeah.
Does that exist? I've not heard of a hard caramel egg.
No, you get the soft caramel ones. They always get demolished in my house, so I try and get to them before the kids do. But I want a fantail version of an Easter egg.
So your favourite Easter egg is one that doesn't exist?
Well, you could close your eyes and eat a fantail, full disclosure.
Well, no,
they don't
can't.
Exist anymore.
So you want an Easter egg version of a chocolate that no longer retails?
Correct. That's correct.
Awesome.
Any
delivered by a unicorn.
That's right, over a rainbow. Anyone making chocolate out there, could you give us like a solid center caramel?
How are you going? How big is this? Like I'm thinking...
Just the little ones, like the little nuggety ones.
I'm thinking the sort of the one, tennis ball size thing, and just a big chunk of fantail.
That's not me, yeah. No, I only want a couple of those little ones, not a big one.
Mm. Actually, if you like caramel, another culinary delight from Chicago, Garrett's Popcorn. And in particular, the Chicago mix, which is half caramel, so super sweet, toffee caramel popcorn.
Don't say half butter.
half cheese. Don't knock it till you try it. Andy was on the fence. I'm an old expert with Garrett's Chicago mix. That is a taste sensation.
Yeah, right. Back at you. Don't knock my hard caramel scented Easter egg.
Makes no sense.
Until you've tried it.
No one will.
No one will be able to try that. Yeah. All right. On that note, that sounds like it's
that's a wrap. Getting... Yep, good RV. We'll jump into the Winnebago and head off into the sunset. We hope you are doing well in all your endeavours. And as Tim mentioned, please reach out. Any guest suggestions are welcomed. We can't get to all of them. Some of them aren't keen, but please let us know your thoughts. Any compliments? Any... I was going to say constructive criticism, but even just outright criticism.
It's just abuse.
Have we had a couple?
Not really. We have on the resilience survey. Yeah, that's been a ripper.
Some of the resilience survey. Your survey sucks.
I didn't score well, so your survey is the reason it sucks.
Yep. And look, our survey sucks for a lot of reasons, but not that one. But yeah, look, please feed in, good, bad, otherwise, and even just to say good day. It is awesome to get feedback if you're enjoying the show or otherwise. It'd be great to hear from you.
And in the meantime, fill your unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run.
Thank you.
See you later.
One of them's growing, not fast enough. One of them's flowing, not far enough. One of them's crying for what has made it sad. One of them's dying from what it never, ever, ever had. I don't want to speak. I've got food in my cheek. I'm too full to roll all on me. I don't wasting away, birds of a feather, counting the days, wishing for leaving, what it's like to be free, dreaming of sunshine. Wishing for leaving, what it's like to be free, dreaming of sunshine.
Now to the debrief. We relentlessly pursue excellence and would love your insights and feedback. Also, if you know someone who is living a life less ordinary, let us know. You can get in touch with us at debrief@unforgiving60.com. That's debrief@unforgiving60.com. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and rate us on iTunes. You can also follow us on social media. Just search for Unforgiving60 on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube.